अथाहम अमराचार्यम अगाध दिशानं द्विजम प्रसादयिष्ये निषठः शीर्ष्णातच्छरणं स्पृशन् अथाहममराचार्यम् अगाधतिषणं द्विजम् प्रसादयिष्ये निषठः शीर्ष्णातच्छरणं स्पृशन् Verse translation. King Indra said, Therefore, with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. Because he is in the mode of goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of the Brahmanas. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him. To try to satisfy him. Purport. Coming to his senses, King Indra realized that he was not a very sincere disciple of his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Therefore, he decided that henceforward he would be Nishatha, non-duplicitous. Nishatha, Shirshna, Tacharanam Sprishan. He decided to touch his head to the feet of his spiritual master. From this example, we should learn this principle enunciated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadan nagati katopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one is benedicted by the mercy of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. A disciple should never be a hypocrite or be unfaithful to his spiritual master. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the spiritual master is also called Acharya. Acharyang mang vijaniyan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead says that one should respect the spiritual master, accepting him as the Lord himself. Navamanyeta karhi chit. One should not disrespect the Acharya at any time. Namartya buddhya suyeta. One should never think the Acharya an ordinary person. Familiarity sometimes breeds contempt, but one should be very careful in one's dealings with the Acharya. Agadha dishanang dvijam. The Acharya is a perfect Brahmana and has unlimited intelligence in guiding the activities of his disciple. Therefore, Krishna advises in Bhagavad Gita, Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya Upadekshyanti Te Gyanam Gyaninas Tattvadarshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. One should fully surrender unto the spiritual master, and with service, sevaya, one should approach him for further spiritual enlightenment. This chapter has been titled, Indra Offends Brihaspati. Brihaspati is the, as stated here, Amaracharya, the Acharya of the demigods, among whom Indra is the chief. Another well-known name of Indra is Devendra, Deva Indra, king of the gods. So it's recited in this chapter of Bhagavatam that Indra was once sitting in his court, as usual, every day for some time he sits in his court, surrounded by all the demigods in full glory. And as usual, or very commonly, Brihaspati also entered that assembly. But Indra, thinking himself very great, did not welcome Brihaspati. He should have stood up to welcome him and offered him all respects. But instead, Indra just ignored him. Noticing this, Brihaspati didn't say anything, he just left. And then Indra understood, oh, I made a great mistake, now I've offended my guru, and therefore he spoke these words, which we just recited now. Now that you know the context, I'll recite them again. Therefore, with great, this is Indra, musing aloud. Therefore, with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. Because he is in the mode of goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of the brahmanas. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him to try to satisfy him. So Indra, understanding that he'd made a major mistake, says these words. He didn't say anything to insult Brihaspati. But that was the point. He didn't say anything at all. He should have respectfully received him, worshipped him. But himself being worshipped by all the demigods, he thought, no need to. No need to worship Brihaspati, his guru. So now he's thinking, I'll go to Brihaspati and bow down at his lotus feet, and that will clear the matter up. But Brihaspati wasn't going to make matters so easy for him. Indra just thought, okay, I made a mistake. I'll just bow down and it'll all be finished. But Brihaspati vanished. He was nowhere to be found. He deliberately made himself unavailable so that Indra could not come and apologize to him. In other words, Brihaspati made a situation in which Indra couldn't apologize to him, because as a brahmana, he's independent. If these demigods don't want me, then okay, I don't need them. Possibly Indra was thinking that, well, he needs me because I supply him food and I supply all his necessities. But Indra didn't realize that Brihaspati didn't need him, but Indra needed Brihaspati. And as a result of losing the favor of Brihaspati, Indra was shortly thereafter overcome by an attack of the demons. And all the demigods had to suffer because of Indra's mistake. Now, in this verse, there is a compound word, aghada dishanam, which in the word-for-word translation, Srila Prabhupada translates as one, or I'm inserting that, whose spiritual knowledge is deep. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, the acharya is a perfect brahmana and has unlimited intelligence in guiding the activities of the disciple. Unlimited intelligence. Unlimited intelligence is only for Vishnu. But here, Srila Prabhupada writes that the acharya has unlimited intelligence in guiding his disciples. So in that particular field, he has unlimited intelligence. You who just had your finger on your mouth, did you ever read my book, My Memories of Srila Prabhupada? No, you who just had your finger on your mouth here. No. I don't know. Yourself. Did you ever read that book? You read it? You remember there's an anecdote in there in which you don't remember? It was actually my second initiation, and it was going on, the yajna was going on, and Srila Prabhupada said, "Stop." And he pointed to the back. There must have been hundreds of devotees present. And he said, "There is a woman, there's a baby here with the hand in the mouth." So he told the mother, "Take the child out, wash his hand, and teach him not to put his hand in his mouth. So go out, wash your hand." Right? You're contaminating the whole area by putting your hand on your mouth. So you should go and wash it and learn not to put your hand on your mouth. Yeah, please go and do that. Please go and do that. And don't touch your hand to anything else in the meantime. These things are supposed to be taught in childhood. Vaishnav etiquette book. But people don't know. Maybe the older people remember. At least I used to see in Bengal, nowadays it's not common even in Bengal, that the little babies, it's natural for them to put their hand in the mouth. The mother will take the hand out maybe 200 or 300 times a day. Have you seen that? Again and again and again, until the baby gets the idea, I don't have to put my hand in the mouth. Have you seen that? They do that, yeah. Not here in the city. All the mothers are too busy being party girls, I guess. What are they doing? Anyway, specifically, the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada writes here, has unlimited intelligence in guiding his disciples. Not in every aspect. In every aspect, unlimited intelligence is only for Vishnu. But how can a jiva have unlimited intelligence in any field? Well, by the mercy of Krishna, he can give the intelligence to someone to act in such a manner. Einstein is praised as very great for being the greatest scientist of the modern times, but that intelligence comes from Krishna. Where is Einstein now? Fly is flying around? Possibly, not very likely, but possibly it's Einstein. Very small chance. It's about as possible as the universe coming into being from a big bang. Maybe even less possible, because it doesn't come from a big bang. There's a chance that the fly flying around is Einstein. But there's no chance that the universe came into being by a big bang. I was just thinking about that. Often we discuss that nothing explodes and becomes everything, which is nonsense. It's not science. It's nonsense, non-science, nescience. But if we think that in the fraction of a nanosecond, just following the Big Bang, there was matter started to manifest. And then beyond that, there was nothing, absolute nothingness. But beyond the area where it was expanding, there was nothingness. So beyond the expansion of the universe, as it's still expanding, according to some scientists. Actually, it's not science. Science means you should be able to say, but they speculate. So there must be, beyond the universe, there must be absolute nothingness still. You understand? There's absolute nothingness, and then somethingness appeared, but beyond the somethingness is absolute nothingness. So there's still absolute nothingness, which the somethingness is expanding into, according to their theory. You can't even imagine it. It's such nonsense. It's not a vacuum, because a vacuum means that it exists within, it's surrounded by somethingness. But absolute nothingness, it's not a vacuum. It's inconceivable. It's inconceivable like horses' eggs. Well, you can even conceive of that. You could conceive of it, but it just doesn't exist. Anyway, getting back to Vishnu has unlimited intelligence, and he may give to the guru the intelligence by which to guide disciples. Acharyang, Srila Prabhupada quotes here, Acharyang mang vijaniyan. The acharya is to be considered myself, Krishna says. Why is that? Obviously, he's not God himself, but in the matter of guiding the disciples, he is as good as God, because he speaks only according to guru, his own guru, sadhu, and shastra. And in various situations, guides the disciples how to act in a manner that is beneficial for them to make spiritual advancement. Just like, for instance, don't put your hand in your mouth. It's not a major principle like chanting the holy names, but it is a principle to be understood, because that contaminates the hand, and then one will touch shastra and one's beads, so it becomes an offense. It's also unhygienic. So in the major matters and the smaller matters, the guru is supposed to guide the disciples. Now, when reading this, that the acharya has unlimited intelligence in guiding the activities of his disciples, then naturally, my disciples, when they read this, will think that I have unlimited intelligence in guiding them. And that's what they're supposed... One should think like that, but at the same time, one should think like that about one's guru and accept as good as God in some respects. But I know that I don't have unlimited intelligence in any sphere. How is that then? The disciples are supposed to believe something which isn't true. Is that correct? I'm supposed to instruct them to believe something that isn't true. Well, what is intelligence anyway? It's a gift from Krishna. Savasya chaham hridi sannivishtaha matasmriti jnanam apohanam cha dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Krishna is in everyone's heart, and he gives remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. He gives to a devotee who is always engaged in his service with love. Tesham satatiktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. He gives to such a devotee the intelligence by which they can come to him. So, admittedly, my intelligence is very limited. There's an actual fly just came. Maybe Einstein heard and came. No, it's all right. It's gone. I'll tell you if he or she comes next. Flies, what are they? Mostly he's or she's. And mosquitoes are mostly females, we're told. Houseflies, does anyone know? Does it matter? No. So Krishna may give that intelligence, if I'm sincere, to serve. And then Krishna may give the intelligence what to say to them. Basically, it's not very difficult. Srila Prabhupada often quoted, Jare deko tare kaha Krishna upadesh amaragyai guru hoya tara edesh, quoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said that whoever you see, instruct them in Krishna's instructions, and in this way become a guru and deliver the world. So often Srila Prabhupada said, it's very easy to be a guru, you just repeat what you have heard from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Although in this very complex material world, which is very complex, even more complex in Kali Yuga, exactly how to behave in specific situations that arise, well, one will have to take guidance from, or pray to be inspired by Krishna to act in the right way. Brihaspati made a decision here. He left. He didn't stay. And as a result, the whole situation of the demigods was completely smashed. The demons overcame the heavenly planets, and all the demigods had to go into hiding. So someone might say, well, Brihaspati made a mistake. He shouldn't have done that. He should have called Indra and called everyone together and made some solution. But Brihaspati, he deliberately did not make himself available to Indra. He didn't let Indra have the opportunity to come and apologize. He didn't want Indra to take it as a light matter. The result was a complete and total disaster. So you might say, well, Indra might think, oh my guru, he overreacted. He made a mistake. But if Indra thought like that, then he'd be in even more trouble. There's no record of him saying that. He had to accept that what Brihaspati did was in the long term better for myself. He acted for my benefit. There's another one with a hand on the mouth. Please go, take your hand off your mouth and go and wash it. So, what is this? If we analyze objective, this objective analysis is very dangerous, actually, in spiritual matters. It has some usage, but achintya kalu ye bhavana tangs tarkena yojayat prakritebhyo parangyachta tad achintyasya lakshanam. Inconceivable matters, by their very nature, but by their very meaning, cannot be understood by the mundane intelligence. And therefore it's useless to try to bring the tool of mundane measurement to that which is beyond our mind, senses, and intelligence to grasp. Certain things we simply have to accept. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Can we prove it? We can prove it if we accept the statements of Shastra. Of course, even with so many proofs from Shastra, some people who are supposed to be committed to Shastra, they will deny it. And most people are not committed to Shastra, so they will deny it. You can't prove anything to someone who doesn't want to believe it. Generally, they think that science means proof and religion means faith, isn't it? But there's no proof without faith. You can't prove anything unless someone has faith. Prove that we are all in Telangana state. All of us sitting here, we're all in Telangana state. Do you have to prove it? It's self-evident, isn't it? Well, if someone says, well, I don't believe it. I came here 10 years ago and they told me it was Andhra Pradesh. So how can you say it's Telangana? Everyone agreed it was Andhra Pradesh, and now you're saying something different? Someone may disbelieve it. Anything. Prove that you exist. Prove to me that you exist. I think you don't exist. I mean, there are actual philosophers, so-called philosophers, who... There's actually a whole philosophy called, what is that, solipsism, in which it actually has a name. The philosophy, it's supposed to be philosophy, that only I exist. Nothing else exists. You can't prove that anything or anyone else exists. There's just me, that's all. So, this is called misuse of intelligence. To invent all kinds of absurd philosophies. But you can't disprove it to someone who doesn't want to believe it. No, only I exist. What's the philosophical reply to that, to defeat him? Kick him in the face with boots. One of Srila Prabhupada's philosophical techniques. Okay. You're lying on the ground covered in blood. But anyway, I don't exist, so I couldn't have kicked you in the face with boots. And you're not lying on the ground because there is no ground, because only you exist. Anyway, absurdity. We don't literally kick people in the face, but it's a reductio ad absurdum. It's a philosophical technique to take someone's argument to the extreme, to take extreme examples of it and show how it's absurd. Commonly used by Vaishnava acharyas in refuting Mayavad. So as far as intelligence is concerned, I can objectively say, I just said we can't use objectivity in understanding spiritual matters. Some things we just have to accept. But in examining this material world, objectivity can be very useful. How do you say objectivity in Telugu? Huh? What does he say? Tarka. I would say it's more like nirapeksha vichar. What do you think? I think that's a bit. It's probably a better understanding of objectivity. So, I can objectively say that definitely, practically all of my disciples are more intelligent than me, at least in some area. For instance, in playing mridanga, they're more intelligent than me. I used to play, but due to joint pains, I stopped playing. I never was that expert, if at all expert. So they have more intelligence than me, and in that matter, and in matters of, generally we don't think of playing the mridanga as requiring much intelligence, but it does require intelligence. but in matters of memory, studying so many different scriptures, understanding science, I can say plainly that Keshavananda Prabhu, my disciple based in Delhi, he's much more intelligent than myself. That's just objective. Another person I initiated, that Nityananda, he's in Vrindavan. He's tremendous intelligence for studying, and he learned Sanskrit and he learns languages. He's very good in music. So they're definitely more intelligent than me. So when you read the Acharya has unlimited intelligence in guiding the activities of the disciple. So even if one is more intelligent in some ways and can maybe remember more shlokas, maybe even in matters of shastra yukti, this is an important term, shastra yukti. You know, Deva Hari, shastra yukti, where that comes? In Chaitanya Charitamrita, shastra yukte sunipun, drida shraddha ja, utamadikari se tariye shongsha. One who is expert in shastra yukti and has firm faith in Krishna is a topmost devotee and can deliver the whole universe. So what does shastra yukti mean? It can mean arguments based on shastra, establishing siddhanta in opposition to upper siddhantas or wrong explanations. And it can mean yukti, can mean fighting. It means two parties get together for the sake of fighting. And it can also mean bringing together, it can mean harmonization also. So shastra yukti can also mean harmonization of shastric statements. Or of an acharya statement. Sometimes people point out that, well, Srila Prabhupada said one thing in one place and something just the opposite in another place. So how do you understand? Then we have to, well, that's the matter of intelligent devotees who have faith that if the shastra or the acharya appears to contradict itself, it doesn't mean he loses faith, but he finds the harmonization. What is the harmonization? So it's an important term, shastra yukti. For madhyamadhikari, shastra yukti nahi jane, drida shraddhavan, madhyamadhikari se mahabhagyavan. About the madhyamadhikari devotee, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that one who is not very expert in shastric, shastra yukti, he doesn't know all this, but he has firm faith. Such a person is known as a madhyamadhikari, middle-level devotee, and is greatly fortunate. And just to round it out, jaha kumal shraddha shekhanishta jan, krame krame teho bhakta hoibeyutam. Who has not firm faith at all, pliable faith, he's called a kanishta adhikari, or a devotee on the lowest level of devotional service. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, gradually, he can also become a topmost devotee. So, it may be that the disciples of a guru are more expert in shastra yukti, in shastric deliberations, than the guru, which, according to this scale that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives, they may be on a higher level than their guru. Yeah. If we think that the disciple always has to be less than the guru, that means that the parampara is in perpetual decline. You follow the point? So it may be that a disciple even surpasses the guru in Krishna consciousness, in Shastric understanding, in preaching, and so on. It may be. And there have been great acharyas in history. Ramanujacharya, especially when we're in South India, we're always reminded of that tremendous personality who, simply by remembering, we feel so blessed. He also had gurus. He had several gurus. His mantra guru, Goshtipurna. We don't hear so much about his guru as about himself. In objective terms, we're getting a little dangerous here, using objective terms to assess the spiritual acumen of anyone. He surpassed his guru, but any real disciple will always think that whatever I do and say, it's all by the grace of my guru. We regularly read from Srimad Bhagavad Gita. It's so famous, still, all over the world. Why is that? Well, you could say because it was spoken by Krishna, but actually Krishna's guru, Sandipani Muni, gave Krishna a blessing that your words will always be honored in human society. And because of that, Srila Prabhupada comments, the Bhagavad Gita is still honored today because of the Guru's blessing. So who is more important, Krishna or Sandipani Muni? Clearly Krishna is. But if you ask Krishna, he will never say, I'm more important than my Guru. It's all by his blessings. As Krishna said to Sudama Vipra, who, when Sudama came to visit Krishna, what happened? Why does that happen? He's using his phone. He doesn't know that he's supposed to be a sound man. He doesn't know that the phone interferes. They don't know anything. He should be sitting with the sound system, but he's gone because he's more interested in being on his phone. It's a dereliction of duty. So Krishna gives this responsibility to a jiva to be as good as him, not to imitate him. They're not like the Mayavadis, who say that soham, I am that, I am God. If anyone says they're God, they're a rascal, except Krishna. He's the only one who can say it without being a rascal. Nevertheless, Krishna gives this responsibility to jivas to guide on his behalf. And this is the way a disciple should think, that whatever the guru ordains for me, that is best for me. Krishna manifests Acharya Vapusha in we find Uddhava says to Krishna that, Krishna, you're so merciful to the fallen souls because you guide them from within as Chaitya Guru, the Guru within the heart, and from outside in the form of the Acharya. So the disciples should think that Indra should think that my Guru has, by vanishing and then in this way, he's not allowing me to mitigate my offense, but he's acting in for my benefit so that I can learn even what a costly lesson. Just because Indra was inattentive and puffed up once, the whole heavenly kingdom had to be pillaged and ransacked and overcome by the demons. That was the result of Brihaspati let that. So a disciple should think, even if I don't understand, it's ordained by Krishna. Krishna wanted this. Krishna is acting through the Guru, which gives a tremendous responsibility to the Guru to guide disciples' lives in accord with what Krishna wants. We find in our ISKCON a whole plague of mini-gurus who set themselves up. They bring people to their guru for initiation, and they set themselves up as being a great personality, and for all practical purposes, they act like a guru to their followers, which is not necessarily a bad thing if they actually guide them properly, but in many cases, they seem to be more attached to the perks of being a guru, the name, fame, glory, and not to speak of the monetary contributions. So it's a very dangerous game to play, to adopt the role of a guru unless one is completely transparent in the sense of simply guiding others on the basis of the teachings of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and simply accepting respect, honor, and service of others, to offer that up to one's Guru and to guide and engage others in devotional service. So it's a very great responsibility, and practically the jiva has no strength to do that. On the other hand, the order is there of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to do so. Personally, I have to think carefully in many cases how to guide disciples in difficult circumstances. Often I consult God brothers who are familiar with the personalities concerned. Often I consult the senior among my disciples. But many times I see how, even without my knowledge, Krishna, Paramatma, arranges so that it can be seen by the disciple that they're getting the proper instruction. I'll give an instance from several years ago. I came to a place. There was where a festival was going to be there, and there was one of my disciples. And for some reason, I didn't want to interact with her at all, not acknowledge her or anything, any such thing. Then after some days, I said, oh, all right. Then I was friendly with her and this and that. And then afterwards, quite some time afterwards, she said that that I was very proud that I'd done so much service to arrange this festival, and I was feeling very proud. The Guru Maharaj is going to praise me, and I just ignored her. Then after some days, she thought, oh, why is he ignoring me? There must be something wrong in my consciousness. And then I acknowledged her. So later, I didn't know exactly that she was proud or this or that, but just something I felt. So that I take as an example of Krishna within the heart, guiding me in a way that is for the benefit of the disciple. If I'd just praised, which she was expecting, it would have puffed her up more, which would not have helped her. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to speak of the genuine mercy of a guru and the sometimes how the guru may cheat the disciple also. If a disciple wants praise from the guru just to boost his false ego, the guru may praise him. He knows he's not sincere. You want praise? Okay, you're wonderful, you're great, blah, 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 blah. Puff him up. That's what he wants. But he doesn't get the real mercy. That's why sometimes we misunderstand. Srila Prabhupada strongly chastised some of his disciples. It doesn't mean he rejected them. That's more a sign of acceptance than rejection. That he had accepted them as his spiritual wards, that it's his duty to speak to them in such a way that they can be rectified. That means he trusted them, that they had enough faith and commitment to him that they could take even very heavy chastisement. Srila Prabhupada was very heavy in chastising. There is a mythical Prabhupada which was being invented and imagined, that he was always smiling and nice and encouraging. He often was, but he could be very, very strong also. Now the hand on the mouth, go wash your hand. Yeah, wash your hand and don't put it on your mouth, kindly. So, as long as we stick to the principle of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, as long as the Guru himself follows his Guru. I was giving the example of Ramanuja, who was such a great acharya. Following Srila Prabhupada, it's round the other way. Again, objectively speaking, we don't see anyone who's near the level of Srila Prabhupada. It was the most exceptional, just exceptional in all ways. But still, it is our duty to follow him as best as we can by sincerely taking his instruction in guiding others. So if we sincerely try to serve and stick to the principles following Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, then Krishna from within the heart will guide us in a manner that we can benefit others according to the parampara system. Again, objectively speaking, I make mistakes. Brahma pramad vipralipsa karana patav arya vigya vakye nahi dosheshab. Illusion, mistakes, the cheating propensity, imperfect senses, these faults are not found in what? In the words of arya vigya. No. Wise, knowledgeable persons. So mistakes are not found. So they don't speak anything which is outside of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Therefore, there's no fault in what they say. But it doesn't mean that they have perfect senses or that they can't make a mistake, for instance, in pronunciation. Again, objectively speaking, Srila Prabhupada's English diction was, according to what would be taught in schools, not always correct according to the rules of English grammar. But that doesn't mean that because of that, what he said is not the truth. What he spoke, even though abhadavatyapi, even though imperfectly composed, it is completely perfect. Some imperfection in the grammatical structure doesn't render it imperfect. So, yeah, I can, it'd be absolutely most foolish of anyone to say that I don't make mistakes. I may misunderstand what someone says. I may misunderstand why they do something. But at the same time, it's not the duty of the disciple to go around looking for mistakes. When we speak about Srila Prabhupada, do we say that he spoke the truth or that he didn't speak English properly? It's absurd. If we take Srila Prabhupada's speech and what he gave via his speech, if we, instead of seeing what he gave, we emphasize that his English diction had errors in it, it would be absolutely insane to do so. People are starving, and someone mercifully brings them so much food, and you say, oh, he brought them so much food. And you could say that brought them so many bags of rice, and you could say, well, it wasn't the best rice. There might have been some stones in it also. Anyway, what a nonsense comment. It's just enviousness to speak in such a way. So, there is the possibility in this very complex world that we live in today to make some major oversights in spreading Krishna consciousness. We may have to take some risks. We may have to trust people who later on appear to be not worthy of our trust. So Srila Prabhupada, apart from teaching spiritual knowledge, he also gave a lot of training in just how to live in this world in a practical way. For instance, don't lose the keys. Srila Prabhupada's key to his almira, to his cupboard, he entrusted to Tumal Krishna Goswami, who lost it. He never gave it to anyone. And then Tumal Krishna Maharaj, Prabhupada entrusted it, and then he lost it. And then years later, he found it. But it was too late. Prabhupada had already passed away. Another major mistake that Tumal Krishna Maharaj admitted to was that Srila Prabhupada, after many, many months of struggling with this rascal, Naya, who was trying to cheat Srila Prabhupada of the land in Bombay, Srila Prabhupada, by some mystic power practically, managed to convince Mr. Naya to sign the paper over to ISKCON. And then, what happened? Prabhupada went away from Bombay, and Tumal Krishna Maharaj and Giriraj, Brahmachari at that time, being influenced by Mr. Naya, they rescinded that paper, they cancelled it. And when he told Srila Prabhupada this on the phone, Tumal Krishna Maharaj just heard click. Prabhupada put the phone down. Practically, he'd signed the paper over. He'd signed the property over to Naya. So Tamal Krishnaraj said that Prabhupada didn't reject us, but he put us through 1.5 years of going into Bombay day after day after day to lawyers' offices. 1.5 years it took us to rectify this mistake. So in spreading a movement worldwide, in this age of the cheaters and the cheated, we have to be worldly wise also. That was another of the characteristics of Srila Prabhupada. I have quite a lot more to say. I'll go on for a little more time. So, again, Tamal Krishnamurti's disciples, are they supposed to say, see, he made this mistake. Is that his duty to say that? No. They may occasionally mention it just to show how dedicated that Tamal Krishnamurti was, that he accepted such a rectification, that he had to spend 1.5 years of his life visiting lawyers and this and that. He took that rectification. That's his glory that he did so. So, I'm not, just in case you're thinking otherwise, I'm not unlimitedly intelligent in dealing with this world and so many things, or in so many ways. Like every other jiva, I have very limited intelligence, so I may make mistakes, I may apologize, that may embarrass the disciple if I do so to them, but I don't want to project that I'm right even when I'm wrong. Is it a rope or is it a snake? The guru says it's a snake. Oh, it's a snake. Oh no, it's a rope. Oh, it's a rope. No, it's a snake. What are you supposed to do? What do you do in such an example? In the twilight, you may see it's quite common to see a rope in the village. Some piece of rope is on the ground. And you might mistake, oh, it's a snake. Well, if the guru says, it's a snake, and you see it's a rope, what do you do? Do you tell the guru he's wrong? Actually, it's a rope? You can do. You can do and say, no, actually, it's a rope. You can do. It doesn't change into a snake because the guru, as is common, people may think it's a snake. It doesn't become a snake. It's not that the disciple, he sees it's a rope and the guru says it's a snake, so the disciple gets a stick and starts beating the rope. That doesn't make any sense. That's called blind following. There are some humorous stories in this regard. The guru and his disciples set out on a journey with the guru on the horse and the disciples walking by the side. So the guru's lunch is packed on the horse, and it falls down, he doesn't notice, they walk on, and after some time they stop and say, he says, okay, let's stop and I'll take lunch. And they say, well, it fell off so many kilometers back. He said, well, why didn't you pick it up? And he said, well, we only act on the orders of our guru. You didn't tell us to pick it up. So then they had to go on. And he told them, if anything falls down from the horse, you don't ask, you just pick it up and put it on my lap so I can see. So what happens? The horse passes dung and they put it on the lap of the guru. You're just doing, see, you told us, we're just doing what you said. So that is foolish. There's also the story, I believe this is from Idris Shah of Sufi, Persian Sufi. it could be from anywhere in the world, that a man is on a journey with his son, and the man is sitting on a donkey. So they're going along, and the boy is walking by the side. And someone calls out, "What man is this? You see, his poor son has to walk while he's riding on the donkey." Huh? So the man gets off and puts the son on the donkey, and they walk on a little further, and people comment, "What a fool he is. He's walking and putting the son. Why don't they both go on the donkey?" And then they both go on the donkey, and the donkey almost collapses. So they both get off the donkey. And then someone points out that, what a fool, they have a donkey and they're not sitting on the donkey. So whether the boy sits and the man not sits, or the man sits and the boy not sits, or they both sit or neither sit, someone's going to criticize. So you have to decide what's the best thing to do. And someone will criticize. Anyway, I don't want to say I'm right when I'm wrong. No one should do that. If you make a mistake, all right, you made a mistake. And someone can correct that. The disciples should be careful, though, in doing so. Not that the disciples should take the position, "Now I have to correct you." Just like a child, it's not the position of a child to correct the father. But if the father or the guru has the attitude that, "No, I don't know anything wrong," then the disciples will also adopt that. And they'll become obnoxious people who no one will want to have anything to do with. Because in this world, we also make mistakes. So it's everyone. The man who made no mistake of any kind ever, he was never born. However, because the disciple shouldn't find fault in the guru, doesn't mean that the guru can think he can do any nonsense and the disciple just has to accept it. That's part of the culture in modern India, that people become gurus and they do all nonsense, and people think, "Well, it's guru anyway, it's guru." So that kind of faith in guru, in one sense you can say it's good, but not really. The guru should train the disciple to have the discrimination to know what is right and what is wrong. That's what gurus are for teaching that. So even if a guru may not apologize for this and that to the disciple, just like the father doesn't apologize to the child, but he shouldn't try to project that everything he does is perfect in all respects. Everything he does is perfect in as much as he does everything for Krishna. That's his qualification for being guru. If he misunderstands something or mispronounces something, that's not a fault, because as long as he doesn't deviate from the principle of doing everything for the pleasure of Krishna. But generally, if someone does something wrong which has caused some trouble to others, even if it's minor, then a simple apology. You just apologize, that's all. "Sorry, I did wrong. I'll try not to do it in future." But then the whole matter becomes dropped. Note that here in this incident, Indra, he thought, "I'll go and apologize." But Brihaspati didn't give him the chance. Wasn't such a small thing that he was going to just say, "Okay, finished." There was a lot of pride on Indra's part that he acted in that way. It may seem like a trivial matter, but it underlying it was so much pride At least Indra recognized I've done something seriously wrong. There's cases where the disciple is clearly wrong, but is so egoistic that he won't admit it. And then again, why accept a guru if you can't accept rectification? If you can't admit that you're wrong, if you think you're so perfect, then why accept a guru in the first place? Probably that kind of so-called disciple, when they hear I've said, I can make mistakes, they'll use, oh, you see, he said he can make mistakes. That means he's wrong and I'm right. That's another aspect of their rascaldom, to use such a statement to try to justify their cheating and lying and manipulation and exploitiveness and overall obnoxious behavior in the name of being a disciple and a devotee. If someone is clearly misbehaving, then they're wrong. That's all. There is right and wrong. Otherwise, there's no need of Bhagavad Gita, or no need of spiritual life, or no need of laws in the state. There is right and wrong. For instance, if someone is inappropriately behaving with, misbehaving with women on a regular basis, there's something wrong. It's clearly wrong. It's not, especially not appropriate for someone who's supposed to be on the spiritual path. Now, someone may say, no, don't criticize. He's an advanced devotee. But advanced devotees don't do that. He may appear to be an advanced devotee in some way, but there's no record in the history of the world of an advanced devotee misbehaving or behaving inappropriately with women. There's not a single instance. You may say that Narad Muni, he sheltered Kayadhu after the demigods wanted to take her, kidnap her, to kill the child in her womb. But Narad Muni didn't misbehave with her. He sheltered her in his ashram. But that also, that behavior is not meant for everyone. Don't imitate. We should not imitate. So someone who is not on the spiritual platform attempts to imitate that, then that should be understood to be simply rascaldom. And in the modern age, especially, no one should try to imitate that, because there's so much distrust, even if someone is on that level. Very hard to find anyone on the level of Narad Muni. So, if someone tries to cover them, let's go back a bit. It's my duty, if a so-called disciple is on a regular basis acting inappropriately with women. May not be gross, but may be inappropriate anyway. It's my duty to try to rectify. But if he doesn't accept his mistake and instead tries to say that the guru is wrong, then that compounds his rascaldom. Simply, let's be straightforward about this. You may say, oh, he's a great devotee. No, he's not a devotee. Devotees don't do that. They don't act like that. So I'm just making this clear, because some of you may know the specific instance that I'm talking about, and out of sentiment, you're attached to someone who is misbehaving in a very serious way. They may do so many good things, but that doesn't justify doing bad things. People are sentimental, but they get misled. Within our ISKCON, there's the case of Kirtanananda, who in many ways did good things. He established the new Vrindavan community, and the worship of Radha, Vrindavan, Chandra, but he was doing some severe nonsense. Severe pedophilia. So we shouldn't think he's a greatly advanced he's spiritually advanced, he did all these good things, therefore it's okay, he could do these bad things. Not at all okay. It disqualifies him from being a guru. He may have some devotion, but he has some serious faults also. So such a person is not fit to guide others. We shouldn't sentimentally overlook serious misbehavior. Now, I'm not saying all my disciples are like that. It's not a, but there may be one or two or maybe more. I'm very happy with most of my disciples who are very seriously and sincerely trying to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada. But this idea that, well, don't, everything's nice, everyone's good, it's wrong. It's not that everyone is nice and everyone is good. It's not that everyone who may be nice and good to you, they're in their heart they're nice and good, because they may be doing so with some ulterior motive. So please be careful in this regard. I'll finish there. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who has unlimited intelligence given by Krishna in guiding His disciples on the path back to Godhead. Hare Krishna.